It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we are here in the studio live as usual on this cloudless but somewhat chilly Saturday morning. We're in that period of springtime now where we're just looking at it before I left home. It can go down the 50s or 60s and then up in the 70s and touch on 80 and such. In other words, if you don't live here, don't come down, but just be wherever you are and be jealous instead. How's that?
Yeah, we've just spent a week touring colleges around Florida, and the weather was absolutely beautiful.
You did get a good one for that, no doubt about it. And the tournament got lucky last week, for the most part. Did have a four-hour rain delay that precluded getting the three-hole playoff done on Sunday, but we did put it on TV on Monday morning and watch it, and Rory's having one heck of a year. It didn't hurt his overall financial situation with a first prize of $4.5 million.
I mean, I could live on that.
For quite some time.
For a year. Or, mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe more.
And what was the American's name? It's a common sounding name spelled a little bit differently. I can't remember. Hadn't heard of him before. He, a relative unknown who played for the most part, kind of lights out, including to get himself into the playoff. And then it didn't go so well when he dumped one in the water on 17. But this relative unknown came up with $2.75 million. And that's life changing.
Also, a good day's work.
Yeah, and think of all the exemptions that second place will get him for here and there. And he'll probably be going to the British Open and things like that. I haven't looked them all up, but taking second in that tournament is a pretty good thing on a resume, I would say.
Definitely. Very cool. Good for him.
But yeah, I'm very happy for him. Call us if you don't have a financial advisor.
Yeah,
I have an idea.
Happy to help.
No kidding. The caddies, too. Can you imagine what Rory's caddy's going to earn this year?
No. Whoa. Yeah, he'll be pretty happy, I would think.
I would have to think so. Well, anyway, I digress. Although it is a show about money, sports are big on money, so there's a little overlap there. I do want to remind everybody a couple of things. First off, the program's brought to you by Strivus Wealth Management in Jacks Beach. That's Adam and his partner, Joey. And we are keeping the name of the show, but the firm will not be listed that way. Although you can find it if you search it. We'll direct you over there, I'm sure. And the other thing is we'll be having a trivia question after the first break. And I remind everybody again that lines are open 904-222-8255. So if you don't hear us talking about something that's of interest to you and you have something on your mind, just pick up the phone, give us a call, and we'll change the subject over to whatever it is you would like to talk about. So all that said, Adam was out of town this week, as he said, and traveling around with the kids to look at some schools and such. And there's an old kind of an old proverb around the office that he does all of his best work when he's out of town.
Yeah, exactly.
And what happened this week? We stopped the bleeding.
I got the market to turn around just by going on vacation. It was not a great week, but it's certainly a nice change of pace. And it happened during a Fed week, which is somewhat incredible in and of itself. Just a lot of uncertainty right now, and you can see it. In fact, I think the Google search term uncertainty and the
volatility,
all of those things are spiking, as well as if you look through annual reports or quarterly reports filed by companies, the term uncertainty is at a, I don't know if it's an all-time high, but it's certainly up there.
It's there.
It's just more of the same in terms of that. And it's mostly driven by politics, which we all know drives the market short term, but not in the long term. So I wouldn't put too much weight into a 10% correction, which on average happens about once a year. Anyways, you never know what the catalyst will be, but this certainly was as good of a catalyst as any, and we've already seen it. So here we are. But the overall was the Dow led the way higher. It gained 1.2%. The S&P was up 0.5%, and the NASDAQ was slightly positive at 0.2%. For the month and the quarter, the indexes are all down, but the Dow is off just 1.3% for the quarter. So really surprising how well that's held up. S&P just off 3.6% for the quarter, and the NASDAQ is off almost 8%. So a lot more volatility in the tech sector right now. Mm-hmm. With the market climbing, the VIX fell back under 20 this week, which indicates a period of stability and low stress in the market. I thought that was a little ironic.
You know, the three kinds of lies. The VIX, the volatility index, can be considered a statistic, and it doesn't always reflect what we perceive in the market.
But it was actually a pretty orderly week in the market. Yeah. It wasn't wild, huge swings that we especially see during Fed meetings. I mean, it was volatile, but not outrageously volatile by any stretch. So interesting to see that the VIX fell back under 20, though, and it ended the week there. So I think it's a decent sign. Things might be falling into place. We also had as I mentioned, the Fed meeting, and the Fed left rates unchanged. The market was very convinced that there would not be a cut at this meeting. I was less convinced. I thought the possibility existed, but it really wasn't even close. They pretty much were adamant that there was not going to be a cut. But the one thing that did change was that it's an almost certainty the market is pricing in two cuts this year now. Yeah, and that wasn't the case.
He more or less confirmed that notion.
Too. Yeah. So I think that he's in a tough spot. I think that there are plenty of arguments to be made to cut rates, but at the same time, you don't want to, if the market or if the economy were to continue to deteriorate, you want to have as much ammo ready as possible to do future cuts. So you don't want to preempt yourself with a cut that isn't needed when you might need it later.
And they did that already. Yeah, it didn't
agreed,
work.
Agreed. They did. I think they were a bit premature on getting started, but if you look at the history of the Fed, they're always late to the party.
Always
so
late.
Maybe it was a good decision.
Too late, too little.
Yes.
Too little, too late. Whatever. And I think that's a reputation that's been well earned over the decades.
For sure. Despite the low VIX and a positive week in the market, bearish sentiment remains near a one-year high at 58.1. That's just off the one-year high of 60.6 that was set 4 weeks ago. Bullish sentiment did see a slight increase this week to 21.6, but it's really low still.
Yep.
By
the way, is a good sign in case you're not a regular listener.
Yeah, sorry, contrarian indicator there. Yep. So the higher the bearish sentiment, the better off the market is going to look in the future. Same investors that answered that survey were also asked what the odds of a recession were this year. 50.4 said higher than typical, and 21.7 said highly likely. This means that 72% of those surveyed think that a recession is coming this year, which means that there will absolutely not be a recession this year.
I will bet against them every day of the week.
No doubt.
Yep.
So I thought that was great news.
It is great news. I love it. All right, lots more on the market and a whole list of topics as soon as we come back. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we do have a trivia question, as usual, sponsored by Paul Lloyd at First Coast Alarm. You can call First Coast Alarm at 904-636-7888. Probably the most talked about thing going on right now in the country is Doge and what it's doing to various government departments and so on. And of course, Chicken Little is running around all day, every day. The sky is falling on and on and on. And all the thousands of government pukes who want to feather their own nests have been complaining about this, that, and the other thing. And it's all going to go to hell. And I'll talk about that a little bit more. But meanwhile, I've been kind of focusing on what's going on at IRS. Because, you know, in the Biden administration, they were going to add about another 80,000 agents and increase audits and all that stuff. Well, all that's kind of on the Doge gone wagon right now, and that's fine. But they are doing some things. We just passed this past week celebrated, if that's the right word, 5 years since the pandemic began. And a lot happened with a lot of things financially as a result of the pandemic. And one of them was that the collection bureau at IRS closed down. Don't know how many people understand that IRS is a tax collector for a lot more than just your federal income taxes. So a lot of people who were late on payments, or even worse, that were payments at the federal or state level, which includes a lot of things like child support, those payments were put on hold along with the student loan payments. Well, they're firing back up. And pretty soon here, they're enlisting the aid of Social Security. So between IRS and Social Security, people are going to start getting wage garnishments from Social Security. There probably aren't too many people out there who understand that that happens. And in fact, it has happened quite a bit in the past, but it hasn't happened now for a few years. Well, they're going to start up again. I want to know how many people, how many Social Security recipients are going to start getting subtractions from their Social Security monthly benefits pretty much immediately. Now, with the reopening of the collection window at IRS, it's a big round number, and you don't have to hit it exactly. But how many people will be affected? So they go to their bank, look at their direct deposit Social Security made, and oops, it's short. Too bad, right? And then there's some lessons to be learned from that, too. So we'll get to those if anybody gets it right, or at the tail end, I'll tell you a couple of things to look for. All right, back to the market this past week.
Yeah, so both European and Asian markets trended lower this week. Mexico also traded lower by over 1%, but Canadian markets kind of bucked the trend, and they saw a boost of almost 2%. Crypto traded slightly higher this week, although Bitcoin is still in the mid-80,000s. That's down from over 100,000 earlier this year. Commodities were up a bit this week, about 0.75%. Gold helped that climb with a gain of 1.2, and oil also contributed, gaining 2%. Silver was down over 2%, though. Despite a slight increase in interest rates this week, the fixed income market was generally up. The bond market gained 0.5%, while short treasuries gained 19 basis points. Tips and longer-term treasuries were up about 60 basis points. So pretty good week in the fixed income markets as well as in the stock market. So one quote-unquote fun thing about the United States right now is that it's no longer just our politics that are polarized by the politics. Now our views on the economy are by political party, too. Looking at consumer confidence data from the University of Michigan, the overall score was a 54.2. That's just a relative reading month to month. It goes up or it goes down based on how people are feeling about the economy. By political party, independents rate the economy a 51.8, so pretty close to that 54.2. But when you divide it by Republicans and Democrats, the numbers change a bit. Republicans rated a 95.7, while Democrats rated a 28.2. So there is a 67.5 point gap in the rating the economy between political parties.
Uh-huh.
No partisanship here at all.
No.
Unbelievable.
That's part of TDS, of course.
But you can't say that because Republicans put it at a 95.7. Yeah. Like, that's off the charts good. That's impossible.
I think that's part of TDS also. Maybe. Some Republicans are so deranged, they think Trump's going to fix this day after tomorrow.
Well, you are seeing that in, like, the 0% inflation on Republican side.
It's unrealistic.
It really is.
And we've talked about that on the show. Hey, people, wake up.
It's just crazy that the world it's so split now that you can't even view things through an impartial, impartisan lens. Like, you can look at the economy right now, and I'd say 54.2 sounds like the right number. I mean, there are things that are good and things that are bad and have been for 5 years. Since COVID, if you are in a certain demographic, let's say the upper middle class homeowner with a white collar job, you're probably doing really well. If you are a lower middle class, blue collar worker, renter, you're probably not doing as well. The world has been divided, And so you could, depending on your view, you could make a very good case that the economy is terrible or it's good. And that's just how it is right now. But to say overall that it's either 100 or 30, I mean, it's just crazy. It's somewhere in the middle. In other economic news, retail sales came in much weaker than expected this month. It still increased by 0.2, except that the expected increase was 0.6. And the biggest decline was in restaurant and bars, which is a bit concerning, although that has been one of the hottest areas over the last 5 years. And the biggest increase was in online retailers. One reason that that may have happened was a rush to get in purchases before tariffs set in. And so a bunch of people flocked to online sales. I don't know if that's true or not, but it certainly seems like a somewhat logical conclusion from the data.
Well, that's just another way to illustrate that behavior and economics can't be separated. We've been talking about that, the static way that the CBO has to do things. They don't consider behavior. And Trump's on the other side of this saying, look, these tariffs aren't tariffs for tariff's sake. These are behavioral modification devices, and they're working. But we're just getting started. But they say, well, why doesn't he just do one thing? Well, because when you say something, then they come around and say something back, and either it goes away or it gets worse or whatever. You don't know yet. But everybody who's been ripping us off is being manipulated now, and it's a wonderful thing to watch, in my opinion.
Last piece of data on the economy, good news. Housing starts rebounded by 11.2% in February. Yep. That's an 1.5 million annual rate, and that is the consensus expected was 1.39 million. So just crush that number. Don't know what's driving that. Not really seeing a robust rebound in the housing market yet, but that's a pretty good
stat. Somebody speculated that people are finally getting used to the fact that mortgages are going to be in the 6% range.
Could have been weather-related, too.
Could have been. They factored it in. The study I've been reading this morning, they did factor in the bad weather in January, and February jumped way beyond what just a pure catch-up phase would be. We got a few minutes for Marshall, I believe. Good morning, Marshall.
Gentlemen, very quick guess, maybe to set us direction.
Sure.
13 million.
How many?
13 million.
13 million. You are too high.
Okay, so I've set a range.
Yep, you did it, and everybody thanks you.
I keep thanking Mr. Musk for being able to look on X and actually see intelligent life forms like Jonathan Turley and Thomas Sowell and various ones that are explaining what's going on. And then at the same time on there, you're able to see some people who have no clue who are trying to pontificate on how bad things are. So I'm sure that's something that y'all have to deal with clients.
Constantly.
But my question for you is this. You know, Musk is taking so much flack, and yet I think we're, you know, if you're looking carefully, you're seeing unbelievable brilliance in running a business, in creating things from an engineering standpoint. And you have all these people talking about the tremendous fall of Tesla stock. And I know y'all don't like speculate on individual stocks. But when I look at the long-term curve of that stock, I'm going, okay, so they've taken a lot of fluff out of it. Sounds to me like a buying opportunity.
I thought it was too high for the last year or so. Absolutely. And if you're a regular type person, you'd rather buy something when it's lesser than it peaking. Now, if you know that company's not going to grow a hell of a lot more right now, a stock that's on its way up and people just finding out about it, yeah, you want it to set a new high. Then you buy in because that's when all the money is made. But when you've got a mature company and a mature stock like that, buy the dip and sell the peak, I say. So I agree with you.
Do you know what the one-year return is on Tesla right now?
No.
44%.
Quick item.
They're hurting him.
Yeah.
Real quick item. The show with Joey is excellent. Anybody who hasn't seen the podcast,
Oh, great. Good feedback. I'll let him know you said that. Yeah. Thanks, Marshall.
Yeah, he'll appreciate that a lot.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Marshall. Always fun to hear from you. All right. We're going to have to take another break here in a minute, and then we'll wrap up a few more things. And there's just so much to talk about right now. The world is a busy place out there, and almost everything touches money one way or the other, and money touches everybody. So basically, we could sit here and just jabber it out, but I'd really like to hear from all of you out there and see what's on your mind in these times of tumultuous markets and everything else. So don't hesitate to call. Meanwhile, we will take a very quick time out, pay a few bills, and be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And I remind everybody, lines are open, 904-222-8255, where you can take a shot at the answer to the trivia question. How many American Social Security recipients are about to find that they're getting a cut in their pay because the Social Security Department is garnishing part of the payment they make to pay off debts that these people owe? We know it's under $13 million. And in fact, I'm going to tell you a little hint. It's less than half of that. It's still a big number.
Yeah, I did the math really quick. That would represent, that number of $13 million represented about 18% of recipients.
Yeah, there's about 70 million people.
Yeah, 72-ish.
This isn't huge, but my point on this thing, one of my many points, I'll just mention it quickly now. If you are approaching Social Security age or already there, and you have kids wanting student loans, and those student loans need to get the best possible deal, need a co-signer, please don't do it.
No.
They will come back. You cannot bankrupt your way out of student loans.
You can't. You will owe it.
Yeah. And I don't want to see you at 67 or 70 years old getting wage garnishments to pay off your kids' student loans because your kid's a derelict. Just try anything before you try that.
Yeah, just in general, that's a bad idea.
Yeah.
We did get a listener question over the break about Tesla, and they wanted to know, if you don't own Tesla stock directly, do you have exposure to it? And the answer is absolutely you do, most likely. If you own SPY, if you own SPTM, those are like total market funds and the S&P 500 fund, you're probably going to own a decent amount of it because it's such a large stock. It carries a larger weight in the index. So I would guess that if you broke down your holdings by company, you would see that it represented a decent, very small portion of your portfolio.
Do you know if they're in the NASDAQ 100 QQQ?
I believe so, but I'll check
it out. I would have to think so. But yeah, you almost can't have any significant diversified equity money in the market without owning a piece of Tesla. It's just very, very
yes, they are
unlikely.
They represent 2.76% of QQQ.
Okay, and 1.6 million shares in the Minnesota retirement fund.
That's right.
Where the governor of Minnesota is talking it down. Brilliance personified. Good morning, Bob.
Hello, Bob.
Can you hear me?
Gotcha.
Now we got, yep.
Okay, good. Hey, just finished one of my wife's homemade everything bagels. Oh my God.
Wonderful.
After doing the morning chores, it hit the spot.
Great.
Want to take a stab at Marshall's guess. I'm going to say half of his would be 6.5 million. I'm going to say it's about 4 million people.
All right. You are closing in, but it's too high.
It's too high.
Yep.
Okay.
But
oh, well.
The world appreciates it because the closer we get, the easier it becomes.
There you go. Uh-huh. Well, you guys enjoy the show. I'll listen in and have a great Saturday.
Thank you. Always fun to hear from you.
So that guess would have represented 5.5%.
It's Donnie, correct?
I think it's 3.2 million.
Still too high.
Really? All right.
Yeah, it's not going to set the world on fire, but this is the answer is a lot of people who are going to be very unhappy, and that's why I'm even bringing it up.
Yeah. Well, Lot is a relative number.
Yes,
though.
It is. Yeah. Well, if you're
we
one of
have
them,
a good one.
Thanks, Tony. You have a good one too.
Yeah.
All right. We appreciate it. Thanks for the call. All right. See, did you finish everything you wanted to?
I did.
Bring
yeah.
up the market. Okay.
Yep. So that 3.2 million would have been 4.4% of recipients.
Mm-hmm.
So we're getting down to a pretty small percentage,
yeah.
just of recipients. And then if you actually do the percentage of Americans, it's going to be really.
By the way, before the COVID shutdown, the collections window at IRS had already collected about $2 billion from taxpayers who were behind. So we're not talking about peanuts when it comes to money.
Yeah, no doubt.
A couple things I wanted to bring up. Something very unusual is not being talked about very much, but industrial production just rose to an all-time high.
Oh, I had a thing about that, actually. Let me pull it up.
It surged 0.7% in February.
Yep.
Expectations were for 0.2.
Yeah, it was a big jump in mining and utilities output that did it. And that makes sense. Well, the mining side, not as much, but the utilities output, where's that all going? AI.
Exactly. But there's one more little thing in there that's easy to overlook. Car makers are booming.
Auto production jumped 8.5%. Yeah. So it's still down 4.8% in the past year, though.
Right. But all of a sudden, it had a long slide. And all of a sudden, car makers are going back to work. Now, let's look at what pledges have been made for investment in this country. We already know a couple of car plants that are moving here instead of going somewhere else where they were going to build them. But how about this one? Johnson & Johnson, $55 billion. SoftBank, $100 billion. And the head of SoftBank says it'll probably be a lot more than that, but he's not committing. The United Arab Emirates, $1.4 trillion. OpenAI and a couple of friends, $500 billion. Apple, $500 billion. NVIDIA, some unspecified number of hundreds of billions of dollars. Those are commitments that have just come in the past few weeks. They're all going to be built in America. How many construction people do you think are going to be employed building all this stuff, followed by how many factory workers making what's in them?
So that's actually the third straight month that industrial production rose, and that ended in February. So what happened like 3 months ago before February? Was there some significant event that took place?
I can't think of anything.
Yeah.
You know, the commercial with the guy sitting on his raft in the ocean and his glasses need changing, and the girl comes up with the ski-doo and hands him the glasses. Good. Is anything else I can do for you? And he looks at her and says, like what? Sitting there floating in the ocean. That's what these people remind me of. And anyway, I thought that was interesting. One thing we're not even considering in that is imagine what it's going to take to rebuild the military. What we have blown up, given away and blown up and et cetera, et cetera. That's all going to add on top of this. Good morning, Bosco.
Good morning, y'all. Another great program.
Well, thanks so much. We appreciate it.
What's I'm going to throw a bracket in there.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to throw a bracket in as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to go half of what the last caller threw in.
1.65. Still too high.
Fabulous.
Yeah, well, you know, the lower this gets, the better news it is for the public at large.
That's true.
It doesn't help the people affected, but it helps the public. So
the downside about that is you don't get all that information that you said that you want to disseminate when you first came on.
Yeah.
One odd question here that kind of bothers me. When you're following a stock, and it gets to the end of the day, you see that, you know, the color of the stock could be whatever, green, you know.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, the stock continues to go. And I notice that is it after hour trading that you'll see these highs and these lows, even though the market's not open for that particular stock?
That's right.
You understand what I'm saying?
Uh-huh. Yeah, no, you're exactly right. That's after hours trading.
Right.
You can get access to that through certain brokers. One of them that I know of, I believe is Interactive Brokers will allow you to.
I think Schwab's starting it too.
Oh, are they? Okay, I had not seen that. But if you're interested in that, it's usually a little more expensive. The bid-ask spreads are wider, and you're not guaranteed to. I don't think you're guaranteed to get a trade at the pricing that you
not
want.
Yet.
But if you had an emergency situation where you really needed to sell or buy or whatever, it is a legitimate way to do that. It's just not, the markets aren't as efficient as they are during trading hours.
Yeah, I will leave you with another thought though. It will not be long when the stock market will never close.
That just sounds miserable.
Oh, I can't imagine. Absolutely can't imagine. But it's going to happen. The pressure, worldwide pressure, is too high. It's got to happen.
Well, very good, very good. No, I see that, and it just kind of drives me nuts, you know, because I'll see some major spikes up. I've also seen major spikes down, you know.
Yeah.
I'm like, what the heck is going on here?
Well, you know, the real gutsy people out there, the real honest-to-goodness day traders, by 4 o'clock, they don't own anything. They never sleep on a stock. So maybe they know something. If they know something we don't.
Gotcha. I'm going to let you go so I can hear the rest. And I like Adam, I like to hear some of those little stories about people that came from nothing to something.
Yeah, for sure. I've got one teed up that I don't know that we'll get to it today, but in the next few weeks for sure.
Good okay. to go. I'll be listening.
Appreciate
All right.
the call.
Hasta luego.
Bye-bye.
Ciao.
Nice to have him calling in again. It had been a while since we had heard from him. And he's kind of a wandering soul. That man goes more places than you could shake a stick at.
Definitely one of our longest distance callers, sometimes from, I think, the Oregon coast or Seattle coast, something like that.
And South Florida and all over. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we're going to take a break here in just a second, but I wanted to mention something. How many of you have what they call a use-it-or-lose-it spending account at work? They have FSA, flexible spending account. I just got some numbers in on that. In 1 year, the amount of money that people lose by not spending it is $4 billion.
Wow.
Yeah, every year. We'll talk a little bit about that after we pay some more bills. All right, don't go anywhere. We'll be right back to talk about that and other things. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And I remind everybody, lines are open, 904-222-8255. We want to know how many people are going to start getting their wages reduced from Social Security payments because they owe people money and they're not paying. And we know that $1.65 million is too high. All right, in the break, we had a caller come in, doesn't want to be on air, but we promised we'd answer. And it was a very interesting question. He says, is this a good time to buy Tesla? And the first thing you all have to know, and most of you do know this if you've listened to us for some time, is that we do not do individual stock investing. We know enough about it to be dangerous, and that sounds dangerous when you think about it. But I do know this. Tesla, within the past 12 months, was selling for $488, did you say?
$488.54 was their 52-week high.
And it's under $250 right now. And if you're going to buy something other than the peak, then, you know, this is a pretty good reduction from that. Will it go higher? I don't know. Will it go lower? I don't know. I do also know that Tesla's going to start building $30,000 robots, probably be shipping in 2027. And Elon himself says this product is going to be huge. Now, you can believe him if you want to. Lord knows he's got a track record worth quoting. And you can, if you're going to bet on something, I would bet on it for the longer term anyway. Everybody knows he's got a great product. And you know, everything would say if you're going to spend some money investing on the results of some individual, that Elon's as good as it gets. That said, I have had many opportunities to buy Tesla. I just don't do that kind of thing, and don't think Adam.
But
does
you do
either.
Own QQQ, and so you own, too, which it represents over what did I say 2.5 above 2.5% of that.
Yeah. So if you like technology in general, then QQQ, the NASDAQ 100 biggest stocks, is an excellent way to get involved in it, and you will get exposure to Tesla. The funny thing, about individual stock investing. If you bought Tesla at 488 and then it dropped down to half of that, and it was below half of that just a few days ago, then you've lost 50% of your money. But if you bought the QQQ and Tesla dropped 50%, you would lose 1.25% of your money for that period. At, you know, I'm 74 years old. That didn't sound good to me when I was 30, and it doesn't sound any better now. I prefer to spread it around. I was taught diversification is the answer to long-term investing, and I believe that with every fiber of my being. Will never change. So thanks for the call and for asking. And if you do buy it and if it goes up, please call and gloat. We love that.
For sure.
And we won't make fun of you or anything. On the other hand, if it falls to 150, you can call us and tell us, and we won't gloat about that ourselves. So we don't bite. That's bottom line here. All right. I mentioned very briefly, workers lose over $4 billion in unspent flexible savings account money every year. If you've got one, please keep an eye on it. There are so many ways to spend that money before the deadline. You just have to think of it. Also know that most plans now do allow a rollover into the next year of something like 60 days where you can still spend last year's money. So don't let $4 billion go to waste.
No, please don't. We have one of those through my wife's job, and we probably overdraw it every year.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. Well, you want to underestimate a little bit just to make sure you use it up, right?
Yeah, it's a great benefit to get that tax-free spending account as long as you use it every year. If you don't use it, it becomes a terrible return on your investment.
Yes, absolutely. All right. I was talking a little bit about government whiners before, and now the Social Security people are proving to be, I think, the worst of the group. And they're saying now that it's going to threaten Social Security payments and on and on and on. And it's not, people. I was asked a simple question yesterday about this, and I said, look, any politician who interferes with payments to Social Security recipients, beneficiaries, is going to be unelected or impeached, whichever sounds quicker. Trump knows this. It will not happen. It will absolutely not happen. You will get your payments just like everybody else. Do not listen to these people. They're just trying to make noise and scare the public. You know, fear and greed are the two things that drive people for their newsletters, for appearances on TV, whatever it is. It's always fear or greed. So the former head of Social Security, I emphasize former, now says prepare for the collapse of the Social Security system, which is going to happen this year because of all the people being laid off who are unessential employees.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. You want to put the logic on that one together? Please call us and tell us how it goes. Just nuts. I also mentioned last week, I believe, that if Trump gets his way and has the ability to take taxes away from Social Security benefits, I can't say I'm really for it. I love the concept. It was made that way. It should have stayed that way. But in reality now, the things that fund Social Security are partly the taxes people pay on their Social Security payments. Without that, it's going to go bankrupt even faster than the 2034 estimate that's currently as close as we can get. This is unacceptable. What it would do, the good part, I guess, we all know that we've been losing purchasing power since 2000 due to the insignificant COLA increases they give us every year, coupled with the increases of Medicare that comes out of that. So it would reduce that gap. And that gap's over 20%. Now we've lost over 20% of our purchasing power. If they took the taxes away, it would take care of 60% of that benefit. But the problem is it would take it from the wrong people. The lower income people don't pay Social Security income tax on their payments as is, so it doesn't help them. here's a bill that's going in front of Congress right now that doubles the threshold. It's always been at 34,000, I think, and 44,000 for how much money you can make before your Social Security is taxed. This bill would double those. Okay, that would take the second tier of people, the ones who are paying money on it, and a lot of those would drop off. And those are the people that we could positively affect. And I would rather see that done than the other one, because it has a targeted impact on the right recipients. It's never going to be right. That's the problem. They can't charge people enough money on this thing to make it right. It's got to get fixed, and fixing it will cause a politician to lose his job. This is the classic catch-22 dilemma mm-hmm. that Social Security is in. It's sad. If anybody comes up with a great idea, please call us and let us know, and we'll share it. So now, let's see. Here's another really good one. They're cutting a lot of staff there. Doesn't break my heart. But how many of you know who Kelly Loeffler is? Former senator from Georgia. One of the ones that in the tumultuous days of 2024, or 2000, I mean, when Biden was getting elected and everybody was contentious about it, and I won't even comment on my feelings about the thing, but she lost her Senate seat to, I don't know if it was Warnock or
Ossoff. No, it was John Ossoff, who's just the trust fund, worst senator.
Yep, trust fund baby and socialist, you know, born with the silver spoon type thing. Anyway, she has now taken over, at Trump's request, the Small Business Administration. How about that? Her first official act happened yesterday. She's laying off 43% of the staff.
Jeez.
Concurrently, same day, they are taking over the processing of student loans. So they're going to do half again as much work with 57% of the people. That's how government ought to work. And you watch. Nobody's going to notice the difference when 43% of the people are gone. I promise you. That's how bloated our government is at every conceivable level. Yeah. Scary, yeah. Isn't it?
Interesting.
By the way, one more little thing before I get into the trivia and such. Gavin Newsom has given free health care to illegals.
And he now needs a big bailout of his health care system.
Needs to borrow $3 billion to pay for free health care.
Yeah.
He thinks he's going to be in the White House? It would be invitation only. And that one's not coming from Trump. What a fool. What an absolute fool. All right, 280,000 Social Security recipients will start getting garnished on a monthly basis now because they're behind on their payments. I know compared to the 70 million people that receive payments every month, it seems like a drop in the bucket. But we're talking about around $2.9 billion that's going to be recovered from this program. That's just what there is now. Do not, whatever you do, do not get involved with something that's going to come back and haunt you when you're older. I feel so badly for older people who are living on a fixed income. They certainly don't need this. And a lot of it, they're very unhappy and ignorant when they found out what they had done. All right, and the final little note of the day is that Harry Dent, one of my absolute favorite idiots who does a market newsletter, says that this year is going to be the biggest market crash you've ever seen, and the hottest stocks today are going to go down by, you ready for this one? 99%.
Wow.
Harry Dent has said some of the dumbest things I've ever heard, and I keep thinking it can't get any worse, and then he proves me wrong.
But it can.
See you next week at the same time. Thanks for listening.